0156. Then you can say,
DNA did right by me.
Hi, Dr. Marissa here. You know me as the Asian Oprah and the host of my weekly talk radio TV show called Take My Advice. I'm not using it. Get balanced with Dr. Marissa. And I have some great news. I just got told I have the morning slot here at KCAA, the station that leaves no listener behind, every Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 a.m. So I can't wait to talk at you so that you know your birthright to be happy 88% of the time. Tune in to KCAA, the station that leaves no listener behind.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Dangerous storms, floods, and wildfires are increasing, so more people are taking action to prepare themselves for extended power outages, evacuations, and other disruptions.
We're starting to see the trend where people are starting to become less reactive and more proactive.
Shane Hobell is the founder of Mountain Scout Survival School. He teaches classes in primitive survival skills.
Learning how to make shelter, learning how to find water, learning how to make fire the old way, literally by rubbing sticks together, foraging.
He also teaches urban emergency preparedness courses. They cover topics such as planning travel routes and rendezvous points in an emergency evacuation, preparing a go bag, and how to communicate if cell networks go down. He says over the years, the audience for his classes has grown, with students coming from all walks of life.
It's literally everyone coming, families, single moms, grandmas.
He says a growing number of people are realizing that the systems we rely on are vulnerable to disruptions. And he says it's empowering to be prepared to help yourself and your community when disaster strikes. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Talk 102.3 FM Riverside, KCAA, NBCRadioNews.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of this program, KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.
No matter what it is in life that you want, you gotta go out there and get it. Still nothing up to a sleeper but a dream. Never give up on your goals, stay focused on you. Focus your view, succeed, cause I'm hoping you do. Keep climbing up the ladder, cause the key to success. Go hard and go home, never settle for less. Life is stress, but we gotta deal with it, homie. Send a prayer to the man to put a shield on it. Work hard for what you get, appreciate what you got. You can always improve, just don't stop. Going for your dream to achieve in your life. Gotta take a chance like rolling the dice. It won't come to you, so you gotta go get it. At the end of the day, add up the digits. Miss Price used to say, if there's a will, there's a way. So I live by it. And to this very day, I kept on mashing and I never gave up. Me believing in myself is the way I came up.
Don't let it hold you down. You gotta get up. These are your dreams. Never give up. Keep on hustling, keep on rocking, keep on make it, keep believing. Never, never, never give up.
I'ma keep hustling till I'm down in the dirt. Number one rule is my family is first. I know you're probably saying this dude trying to preach a sermon. Let me speak cause the streets deserve it. Least they learn it, but the pain and the progress. Face to face with the strain of the process. Don't live your life like a Loch Ness. Anybody can succeed if you compete in the contest.
What's up, team? This is Robert Porter with the I Love San Bernardino County Radio Show on KCAA NBC 106.5 FM, 102.3 FM, 1050 AM, where we will talk politics, culture, and history. In a second, we'll be speaking with the executive director of the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra. But before we get into that, I'd like to talk to you about our sponsors, Celebrity Bar and Grill on 40th Street. Oh, man, I know it's hot, team. So go on in there, cool off with a nice, cool drink. They got margaritas. They got daiquiris. They got whatever you want behind the bar. But, of course, I'm going to get mine virgin. You know, I still deserve some margaritas and daiquiris, don't I? But I just don't put no Bacardi in there, no Jose Cuervo. But you can if you want. And then after having a drink or a brew over there, sipping on your Corona, why not just have a nice burger or some hot wings or a steak? Max has it all over there. He's got some good food. His steak specials are pretty awesome. His burgers are good. French fries or onion rings. So. And Max has really done a lot for the community. He gave the spot for the Juneteenth committee to meet and set up that great event over at San Bernardino Valley College last weekend, and the weekend before that. He also showed up, and it was hot, and I got some pictures of him doing his thing, and he's just an all around good guy. Right now, he's trying to help some pups that were scared by fireworks, and just showed up at his spot over there on Celebrity. So if you're missing a pup and you're in the 40th Street corridor area, hit him up and see if your pups are over there. I also like to thank Manel Iskander from the Green Shack and the whole and Nardine and Jerry over there and of course Nick, and they're just good people, and Green Shack has been a supporter of mine for like 7 years now. So they're great people, and I always just go in there and hang out, and they call me their ambassador. But really, we're just good friends, and I kind of like consider them my family. So if you want to go over and have a Green Shack, I got mafia meatball sandwiches and the Green Shack signature and beef dips and they have these good puddings that are just yummy and stuff. And then, of course, don't forget Inland Empire Optometry on 19th and Waterman. Provide me with all my glasses. Really good people. Carol Klein over there is just an awesome person to me. She's helped teach me culture. Really nice lady. Taken me several times to the LA Philharmonic. Exposed me to that culture. And one of the main reasons I like Symphony now is because of her. And that's why we got this show coming on with Ann in a second. With that said, I wanted to say that the city meeting is canceled next week. They decided earlier on in the year that that the meeting the next Wednesday will be they're not going to do it because basically the city staff have they don't get a 4th of July. So they're working on getting the agenda and everything out, and they don't get any time to relax and enjoy the holiday. And personally, I believe our city staff work hard, and they deserve a little break here or there. So that was a good move, and Councilman Sanchez pushed for that a couple months ago. So I thought that was pretty awesome. I went to a skateboarding event, the Blair Attics. Over there at Blair Park, Jason Lola set up this skateboard event for kids and for adults, and I was pleasantly surprised at the tricks that were being done in front of me. I mean, I even got hit in the shin with a skateboard. It was raw and awesome. Of course, I pretended like it didn't hurt, but later on, I was like, man, that hurt a little bit. But, it brought me back to my skateboarding days in San Bernardino, where we would go to Pipeline and different places, and basically there wasn't a lot of skateboarders, and there was, considering the amount I saw there last weekend, I was like, wow, there's a lot of skateboarders in this town. So I know he's going to hook up with Parks and Rec Director and make some more skateboarding events. So if your kid skateboards or you like watching skateboarders do their thing, or you'd like to volunteer and have your vendor there or whatever, let me know. Hit me up on Facebook. Robert Porter, you can also always message me. And then I'm always on I Love San Bernardino! And we're getting close to 45,000 members out there, team. So we're building up a good community following, and most of those people are from San Bernardino, but it's for the whole county. We have people from Victorville, Hesperia, Yucca Valley, all over. So if you're interested in those areas and you want to find out more about what's going on in our huge community all the way around the mountain range, follow Ilo San Bernardino, and it's pretty raw. You know, I do let a lot of joking happen on there. I try to keep the negative stuff down to a minimum. I haven't been focused on any federal politics or anything like that. So if you want to get away from all the abortion talk and things like that, get on there. I do let a few things through here or there, but most of the time we try to keep it calm so we don't end up fighting. Yeah, we'd rather fight about potholes and politicians and stuff. So July 2nd will be the day where they finalize the results from the San Bernardino County Voters Registrar Registrar of Voters. And so basically it looks like right now in the first ward we got Theodore Sanchez, and he's not going to have a runoff. In the fourth ward we had Fred Charette, and he's not going to have a runoff. And then just recently Sanders up to 60 points, so Councilwoman Sandra Ibarra from the second ward looks like she's not going to have a runoff with Terry Elliott, which is she came from behind. So it's been like it shows how important it is to vote. And it also shows how this new system of mail-in voting extends the time of voting, so like these surprises can happen. Now, of course, some people don't like that, but I actually think it's kind of fun watching the race progress and see what happens. Then there's Helen Tran and Jim Penman in the mayoral race, and Valdivia is out. And I know you all will be seeing those signs everywhere. So I'm putting a call out to everyone, Henry Nickel. Terry Elliott, John Valdivia, the mayor, please go get your signs, man. Clean them up. They've got graffiti all over them. They're not even like even. They're just hanging off the fences and stuff. Get those things out of here. Just because you lost doesn't mean you shouldn't have to clean up after yourself. Yeah, it's kind of like just plain out littering. And I understand that some of you are upset that you didn't win, or you kind of withdrew, you're depressed, or whatever the reason is. But that, you know, get undepressed by cleaning up the city, turn over a new leaf. And just because you lose doesn't mean you're not still involved. I see Treasurer Ortiz kicking butt out there, going to all these events, still involved in the Neighborhood Association, still showing up to the city meetings. So this is, that's an example that you all should be following. So please pick up your signs. That would be nice. I'd like to do the San Bernardino history tidbit on a street that you all might know. I'm reading from the book Guidepost to History Concerning Origins and Place Names of Street Names in San Bernardino County by Elizabeth W. Richards. And this is the Court Street. So you want to know why they call it Court Street? We're going to find out right now. San Bernardino County's first public building was the Mormon Council House, which was used as a county courthouse for some years. From 1858 to 62, county business was transacted in the one-story brick residence erected by Q.S. Sparks on the corner of 5th and E Street. The supervisors then bought the residence of Charles Glacier on what was to become the corner of Court and E Streets. In 1874, a two-story frame courthouse was erected behind the Glacier home for $25,000, and it can be seen at the top left in the middle in the picture here. It's a nice little building. You couldn't get that for $25,000 now, that's for sure. As the county grew, the courthouse became inadequate, and the supervisor submitted a proposal to vote bonds to the amount of $125,000 for rebuilding a county jail and rebuilding the county courthouse. The amount of the bonds and site chosen met with strong opposition, and the supervisors then proposed a bond issued for $75,000 for an erection of a hall of records. This, too, was voted down, whereupon the officials levied a tax of $40,000 and completed the hall of records in 1891. It was opposition to this plan that started the talk in regard to a possible change of county seat and of division of the county into San Bernardino and Riverside, which I always tell everyone, in Riverside, guess what? You used to be a part of San Bernardino County. but we all used to be a part of L.A. County. So history is how it works. The Board of Supervisors consisted of William H. Randall, J.N. Victor, J.C. Turner, and I.W. Lord took the drastic action of levying direct taxes and letting out bids for a new courthouse. After the bond propositions were twice voted down in 1892, a second building on the corner of Court and E Streets of Colt and Marbled and Sepsi Sandstone was completed. It was erected in front of the old courthouse and may be seen in the middle picture. In the middle picture below, right, it served as a county until 1927 when the present courthouse was erected on Court Street's intersection, or Court Street intersects Arrowhead Avenue. So that old building is actually just 1927. It's really not that old. But pieces of the old courthouse are actually in front of the old county courthouse in like a little like memorial area. They have, I think they have a couple of these spires that were at the top, and I think there's a keystone. So a little couple pieces they saved of it. So our history's still kind of there. And then I know the Native Sons of the Golden West put up a few signs that register all the historic areas in that area. So if you want to read, this is Guidepost to History. I don't know if they even make this anymore. So Santa Fe Federal Savings and Loan. I don't even know if that exists anymore. So it's a cool old book, but it tells a little bit about our history. So our history is important. We just had the Arts and Historical Preservation Commission meeting, and what I'm working on there is getting our monuments cleaned and maybe getting some monuments fixed, especially if the brass was stolen off of these areas. That's going to take a vote of our team to, and then some proposals and send it to the city council. But right now we're working on doing the Veterans Monument rock right in front of the I guess closed down City Hall. It's still our City Hall, but it's a huge building, but it's closed down for now, and hopefully they'll fix that soon with some retrofitting. I noticed, unfortunately, my mama just went to the hospital and over at St. Bernardine's, where I was born in 1976, and they did the earthquake retrofitting to their building. And it looks, can you say poopy on the air? It looks kind of poopy. But it's still, you know, it saved the building, and it's structurally sound now for an earthquake. And that building we have over there at City Hall, can be retrofitted. They've had bids for it. It's costing more and more as we wait, as time goes on. But it can be fixed, and I don't see why that retrofitting couldn't be made fancy, too. If you asked an artist to come up with an idea or an architect, they could enclose those things and make them look good, too. So let's hope for that. I did notice at the San Bernardino Mayoral Forum that every single mayoral candidate, the seven of them up there, were talking about moving back into City Hall. And I would love that, considering that the building they're in now is basically rated the same as for earthquakes as the other one. So, I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense. But anyways, let's hope that we get that City Hall working. All right, well, let's move into our interview. Please introduce yourself and make sure you have the doctor in there.
Yeah, well, you can put the doctor in there.
I'm Ann Viracella. I'm the executive director of the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra.
And you can have the doctor on there. And in political science, was one of my favorite subjects.
Thank you.
And anyone who's a doctor, worked hard, did their, you know, put their thesis in and their doctoral program, did all their hard work. So you deserve that title. And
thank you.
Just to let you know that I respect it very much.
Well, thank you.
I'm not a doctor. Maybe someday, but not yet.
Well, yeah.
So let's start off with that first. Where do you teach?
I teach at the University of Redlands. I've been there for almost 25 years.
Incredible school.
Yeah, it's lovely. I'm at the School of Business and Society. That's our new name. And I do anything that's quantitative.
Okay.
And thesis.
All
yeah.
Right. Well, that's the hard stuff right there.
No, that's the fun stuff.
Yeah, I just did my on my graduate project, and the writing for that kicks my butt, man. Yeah. It really. I'm glad it's over with. I'm getting a break. Where were you born? We'll go to the beginning.
I was the first baby born at the Glendora Community Hospital.
Okay.
A long, long time ago. Because you just said you were born in 76. You know what I was doing in
1979?
Right. You know what I was doing in 76 when you were born? I was getting married. That's what I was doing.
Well, time does fly. Time does fly. Yeah. So when did you decide to come into the area of San Bernardino?
Oh, I've lived in the Inland Empire all my life.
Okay.
More or less. I mean, in L.A. County for a bit of it, in Pomona and Claremont. But I've lived in the area for a very long time. So it's nothing new. I've worked out here forever.
Any local schools did you go to, or did you?
Went to prep school in Glendora.
Okay.
I went to college at Laverne.
Okay.
Did my doctorate at Laverne.
Okay. All right. Those are still really close in California.
Yeah.
You know, we all go to LA to do different things. And
no.
No, you're like, no. I don't like LA.
Yeah. No offense to LA. LA is lovely. I'll go into the, you know, east end of
what
LA.
What about the beach?
I don't like the beach. Did you see my skin? I'm Irish, man. Yeah. We go near the beach. We explode.
We get burnt. We get burnt real
right.
quick.
No, I like our area out here.
It is beautiful.
Truly do.
And I do promote it very much so. But I also say, hey, you know, expand your horizons, you know, check out different areas. And I often like to show what's going on in these other areas. So maybe San Bernardino can bring it upon themselves to create something here or do something similar. You know, sometimes things that work in L.A. or, you know, in Victorville or whatever will work in San Bernardino, too.
Sure. But if we have a good enough earthquake, we might have a beach.
That's true. But what's really good, let's hope for no earthquakes.
No, me too.
Yeah, but what's really good is that the symphony here is very old. It's got some real history to it.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the history of our symphony?
Well, we were established in 1929 by Jimmy Guthrie. He was a teenager at the time. You know, the Guthrie family and the Sun newspaper and all of that.
Okay,
who founded it. And Jimmy, as a young folk, was a musician, and he liked to play music with his friends. He liked all types of music, and he believed that communities that had access to the arts, particularly to music, were more vibrant places. They were places that were likely to be more successful. They were certainly places that people would want to live in more than communities that lacked that kind of vital access. So he founded what eventually became the San Bernardino Symphony. It was a community symphony for a long time. It wasn't until the 80s that we incorporated. We became professional, which means we used union orchestra players. And we hired our first director. I don't even know if we had a director at that point in time. It was probably in the 90s before we had our first director. So it was a community symphony for a long, long time. But we've been around since 29.
So did a lot of people play like the violin and back then? So like was it easy to get locals to come?
Yes.
And
yes.
Was it mostly youth, or was there, you know, elders, or do you know about the makeup
the
at that
photos
time?
That I've seen of that time seem to be pretty diverse age-wise.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
What I have noticed at symphonies is there's youth there, but not too young usually.
No,
yeah.
No, they're adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there's some like they were like at the LA Phil, they were talking about some people that have been there like 48 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, that's like to be able to do that for your whole life. So there is a way to make money by playing musical instruments and not be like, you know, Guns N' Roses or.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's an amazing career. All of our people are professional musicians. That is probably their full time job, unless they're also teaching music. A lot of them also teach music at the college level. But if you are a local musician. And local for us would be L.A., you're probably working on movie sound stages, that sort of thing. Because there you can be employed all year. If you're working for us, we're going to do 7 concerts a year. Probably 4 of those are going to require a lot of musicians. So you're not getting rich working for us or... Redlands has a symphony working for them. Riverside has a symphony working for them. That isn't going to do it for you. That's a per contract work. So we're all professional.
So it's just like every other entertainment job. You probably should have a bread and butter one too.
Right. Yeah. So when they do things like working on soundstage work, movie soundtrack work, things like that, it's a longer period of time that they're working. It's not a one-off contract. We do just 4 rehearsals and that's it.
Okay.
So it's a longer contract for that. And then once you get a good name in the industry, you're called up to work for all sorts of different movies and such.
Do you have a roundabout amount that you get paid per, like a musician might get paid per a symphony? Or is like...
It depends on what they do.
Different price ranges, like... So, like the horn section, or do they make more money than the violin?
No,
or the strings, or
no. You make more money if you're a principal, so you're the lead player, the first chair.
Okay.
In that section, or if you're the concert master.
Okay.
And that's about it. And then there's also a thing called doubling. If you play the flute and the piccolo for different times, so you're paid extra for doubling. You're paid extra for cartage. You have to lift a harp around or something like that. There's a little extra money involved in that. But we don't negotiate individual contracts.
Okay.
We work through the union. We have a CBA, and it says at this level you're paid this and at this. But it's not like 6 chairs less than 4th chair.
Okay.
All of the non-principal players are paid the same. I don't. You know, it's not all that exciting.
Oh, it's still interesting to me. I always wondered how they got paid. And you still didn't say an amount. So like,
no, I didn't.
Yeah. Did you do that on purpose? Or?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, because it is kind of all over the place.
Oh, okay.
So, but they are wonderful union players through AFM Local 47 in L.A. Shout out to those guys.
We'll let you pull that politician on me and skirt that question. With the symphony, when did you take over as director?
I became director in 2013. I've been here ever since.
And what's involved in being a director for our symphony?
Well, the director runs the business. So the conductor, people say, like, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm director of the San Bernardino Symphony. And they're like, oh, you must play music, or that must be exciting to be out in front of everyone there. And I'm like, no, director, see, we're not on, this is not a good example for radio, but conductors do this and directors do this. So when I was just saying what conductors do, I was mimicking what a conductor does with my hand. When I said what a director did, I put my hand out, because our job is keeping the business open.
Like a principal at a school or an administrator at any place.
Right. Yeah. Except at a school, you usually have funding coming in. For something like a symphony, you need to create those levels of funding.
You don't have a billion-dollar endowment?
No, we do not have a billion-dollar endowment. We have some lovely investments that wonderful, generous people have bestowed upon us over time, but the day-to-day kind of money, paying staff, paying for concerts, paying for this concert we have coming up in July, that's all sorts of generous people and corporations, businesses throughout the region, as well as grants that we write that allow these things to happen so that we can keep our ticket prices affordable for anyone who wants to go. Like this July 2nd concert we're doing next Saturday on the football field at Valley College, there's $10 general admission seats. We have never done a $10 seat, but this is general admission. You get to sit on the lawn or in the bleachers.
You mean the kids?
Everybody. Well, actually, kids under 12 are free.
That's awesome.
Because we want everybody to come out to Valley College and look at the beautiful, beautiful location. If you've never been on the college campus before, this is your opportunity. Doors will open at 5:30. Valley is doing something they're calling Summerfest. So there's going to be informational booths, and there's going to be food vendors, and there's going to be campus tours and face painters and all of that. And that part's free. And you can just come at 5:30, get to know the campus. If you've been thinking about, I want to go to college, but I don't want to go far from home, or I'm not sure what I want to study, or maybe I want to study something that's offered at community college, or I want to save my parents a whole bunch of money and go to community college for the first 2 years, but I don't know which one. This is your opportunity to come to campus, check it out, and then hang around and see the concert, because we'll be selling tickets at the door.
And if you, also with Valley College, if you want to keep your kids out of trouble in high school, you can be like I did, and I actually took courses after school at Valley.
Yes.
And it provided credits for high school. And then my senior year, I only had like one or two classes. So it was like I could work and make money and do all kinds of things. So it actually did keep me out of trouble taking chemistry and political science at Valley.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a good experience for me. And Valley is a beautiful campus.
It is a beautiful campus.
It's a cool old architecture.
And new architecture. The kinesiology building is state-of-the-art. And we just broke ground on the new applied technology building. That building has won 3 design awards, and it's not even been built.
So I was just there for Juneteenth, and hadn't been there in probably since before COVID. So to get back on my old campus and see everything, I'm like, wow. This is really a beautiful campus.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's
gorgeous. So it's a great spot to have the symphony. Mm-hmm. Now, acoustically, do you prepare for that, not having anything to bounce off of or being inside? How do you do that?
We have a wonderful group that's coming out to do all of our staging, lighting, and sound. Mm-hmm. And they're going to make sure that all of that is perfect.
Okay.
So when you're out there on the beautiful football field, you're going to hear beautiful music, and it's going to sound fantastic. There's also going to be huge video screens, so you can see everything.
Great on the, but is, mm-hmm. is it a little bit different than what you do when you're at Sturges?
We're at the California Theater, or wherever. Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's very different.
Yeah.
So, but we're working with some wonderful professionals that'll make sure that it's fantastic music.
So that's what I'm going to move into next. Like, so can you tell me like the historically where the symphony has played, and do you know those buildings by any chance?
Or? We play at the California Theater.
Just there from the very beginning, or?
Well, we played some summer concert at the. You know, I always say it wrong. Is it Secum or Secumbee?
I've heard both. It's Secum.
Okay,
I know for
thank
a fact
you.
Because I've actually met the grandson of Secum, who was named after.
Well, thank you so much because I have always wondered, and I've heard people speak with authority using both names. So we have played there before, like Independence Day concerts, things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's been a long, long time. We've played up. At Casulas, at Cal State. We've played out in Fontana. We have done concerts, and up in the mountains, we've done contract concerts kind of all over. But for our season, which is what an orchestra is, you know, expected to do, we perform at the California Theater for our large shows, and then our more intimate shows, like we did one recently where we had the Lyris Quartet. And we did that at the, and then we had Robert Theis, one of the most wonderful pianists that you will ever hear. We did those at the Valley College Auditorium because it's smaller.
Okay.
And so you're hearing the music more in the way that it was intended to be heard. It's more of a chamber series. All of the nuances of a single person playing piano is lost when you're in the California Theater where it seats 1,730 some odd people. You just lose the nuance. But when you're in a smaller venue, something that seats under 600, you know, it's still a crowd. But you just, you hear it better. You're up closer. You're seeing it, you know, more. It's just a different experience.
You feel the vibration scene. Even in the California Theater or mm-hmm. even on the football field, you're mm-hmm. going to feel these musical vibrations
in
your body.
Yes.
And it actually, it kind of creates like an adrenaline kind of feeling, mm-hmm. like excitement. It releases dopamine,
all of that. Yes.
You're like, wow, this feels good. Mm-hmm. And then I've opened my eyes, of course, and watched. It's kind of interesting watching them play, especially pieces you've heard before and mm-hmm. you never even thought, you know, seen it in a movie, you never mm-hmm. even thought that, oh my gosh, it's that person who's actually creating that sound.
Right.
But then also closing your eyes and just feeling it too. It's like so relaxing that the other day I almost fell asleep in there. Like, not that it was boring, right. But it was like just so relaxing on my body. I was like, whoa, wait a second. I got to, you know.
Yep.
So like
some music was written to be that way.
And and then of course it, like, the tempo would go up and, you know, the climax, oh, like everybody's like awake and like, I don't know. It's just, it really, you go through all these emotions that I didn't really understand when I never really had attended.
You experience what music does for the brain.
Yes.
Have you ever watched a movie and they're playing music and it is so suspenseful that you just, you know, you're seeing the woman go down into the basement and you're thinking to yourself, you're idiot, get out of that basement, right? Yeah. But the music is making it worse, right? Or at a part of a movie that's particularly poignant. And you just well up with tears because not only is the acting good and the storyline's been good or whatever, but that music is drawing it out of you. And that's what it does. And good music performed well, there's nothing like it.
It can make you emotional, too.
Yes.
It's amazing, and that's why everyone should at least, you know, more than just the movies, team, you should really experience this. And it's a great opportunity to do it on July 2nd at the San Bernardino Valley College for $10. And there's fireworks.
Yes. So, and and if you are not a general admission seating kind of person and you would like to be seated at one of the tables for assigned seating, that is also available. And all you have to do is go to our website, which is sanbernardinosymphony.org. And just click on tickets, click on July 2nd, and you can choose your own seat, or you can buy general admission as well, and that's just $10.
I saw you got your list there, so you want to rattle off what they'll be performing?
Yeah, well, we're going to be performing both patriotic music because of Independence Day and in honor of our city. And we're also going to be performing a lot of pops music. And if you're an American songbook kind of person, you'll know a lot of these songs that we're going to be doing. But the, you know, the patriotic things are things that you're going to expect, like the Stars and Stripes Forever and Liberty Bell March and America the Beautiful and all of that sort of thing. But we also have two wonderful vocalists who'll be with us. And they are Laura Dickinson, whose voice you will recognize if you have kids or you are a kid or you just like to watch Phineas and Ferb. She's the voice of several folks on that, as well as a lot of other things. Sophia II, I believe, is another Disney show, but she's a Disney voice you will recognize. And we also have Ashley, I'm going to say it wrong, it's F-A-A-T-O-A-L-I-A, Fa'atoalia.
Okay.
So apologies to the family whose name I just said it wrong. But he is both soul and opera. So he's going to be singing Nessun Dorma, which is opera, but he's also going to be singing some soul music.
Okay.
So Laura is going to be singing a song from one of my favorite movies, Greatest Showman. She's going to be singing This Is Me, and I understand her rendition of that is absolutely not to be missed. But you're going to hear California Dreaming. She's going to you're going to hear, let's see, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm and Before the Parade Passes By and, you know, California Dreaming and, oh, goodness, he's going to, Ashley's going to sing Change Is Going to Come. I think that's him. All sorts of things. Can't Help Falling in Love. You're going to know the music. And then at the end of the concert, we're going to do the 1812 Overture and also Stars and Stripes Forever. And that all is going to be done to fireworks. Because you need fireworks.
Exploding. You're going to have patriotic music.
Yes.
To celebrate our independence. Well, 2 days before, but still it's celebrating our independence.
Well, everybody will be celebrating on the 4th. So this is your opportunity to start out that weekend really fun and celebrate a couple days early.
And get the kids out there to see some fireworks and expose them to some good music.
Yeah.
So we'll get away from the fun aspect. I'd like to know a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra. And like, so you have some boards. Can you explain to me what the, you know, you don't have to name every single person.
No, I won't. Cause yeah, there's a lot. Yeah.
But tell me what their job is, what they do and how they get, this position.
Well, we're a corporation. So a corporation must have a board. And so we do. And we will actually be doing the handoff between the outgoing president, Dean McVeigh, who is a lawyer here with Lewis Brisbois. And he'll be handing off to Judith Vaez, who I know you know. She is our city's former mayor.
And a good friend of mine. He's yes. awesome.
Yes, yeah, and she'll be the incoming president.
Oh, right.
So she was president before. Yeah, and she's going to do it again.
I believe she's told me that before.
Yeah.
And you know, former mayor, and she ran for re-election, and no one, you know, unopposed.
Who would run against Judith?
Yeah, nobody.
Nobody in their right mind.
Yeah.
She is fantastic.
And she's a fun lady.
Yeah, and she was once president of San Bernardino Valley College, where the concert will take place. So that's kind of cool. But so we have a president and we have a vice president, a president-elect and all of that. And then we have a bunch of board members at large. The job of the board is to be ambassadors for the organization. Also to help set our policy, right? Mm-hmm. They put into place policy. What else do? They are fundraisers for us. That is a very important part of their job. So we ask them to do that because people in the community know who they are. So they're fantastic people. We have board members from Cal State's music department. We have local CPA. We have folks just from all over the place.
So the ambassador position, is that why so that's why Victoria hit me up and said, "Hey,
Victoria Seitz, yes,
she's like, hey, you guys ever do on your radio show anything about the symphony?" And I'm like, that sounds like a great idea.
Yep, Dr. Seitz is in the community for us. One of the things that I really love she does is she goes to the places she does business with, her tailor, Telos Tailor, she goes to Green Shack a lot. And says, would you like to put an ad in the symphony program book? And this is great because those ads pay for the program books because they don't get printed for nothing, and we hand out thousands. So she is terrific at talking about us to the place people that she already does business with. That's kind of just what our board members do.
Damon Alexander does a good job of that too. He's supposed to be here right now. Where are you at, Councilman? I'm going to have to give him a call later. I know he's a busy man, but he usually never misses anything. So he must have slipped his mind or he has something else he might have to do. But Damon, he always mentions the symphony in the city council meeting. So
I appreciate
that. He's a good ambassador, that's for sure. How many people are on the main board and there's a secondary board too?
Well, the symphony has a board of directors, then we also have a volunteer board through our guild.
Okay, so can you explain that a little bit? Because I'm not really...
Sure. The symphony has a volunteer group that we identify as a guild. It is a committee of the board, and they have their own board as well that helps to govern their actions.
Okay. And they're ambassadors too. Bringing money and things like that.
Our guild is amazing. Our guild is a very hardworking group of people. The incoming board president is Linda Savage, a name you'll know from around town in education. Our incoming president elect is Gwen Rogers Dowdy, and somebody else. Yes, and a fabulous individual. And it's just it's a wonderful group, but our guild does the things that we have a very small staff. Our staff is me and a part-time person, and that's it.
That's pretty small.
That's the whole thing to run the organization. And
so I should be saluting the boss right now.
Hey, what the heck? I'll salute you back, man. And so our guild does things that we could not possibly do with the limited number of hours in a day. For instance, after you go to one of our concerts, you are invited to a post-concert reception, and the guild puts that on. The guild provides the docents that go to every third grade classroom in the San Bernardino City Unified School District to introduce the instruments of the orchestra to the third graders, because in our school district, fourth graders can begin to study orchestral instruments in as part of the regular school day. So the teachers don't have to learn that.
Our future right there.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And we provide that to the schools for free, as we do two free concerts for their kids every February or March.
Okay.
And so that's a really marvelous thing to do. Our guild also, let's see, what does our guild do? Oh, they do the food for the musicians at rehearsal. They provide the volunteers who help to erase music at our Guthrie Music Rental Library, which is held it's held at the Feldheim Library.
Okay.
So they take care of all of that. Our guild is just wonderful, and they allow us to be able to extend hospitality to all of our patrons. So I know that I've gone to some orchestra performances, and afterwards there's a special event for the major donors and things like that. And we don't do that in San Bernardino. We began as a community orchestra. We're not a community orchestra now, but we are an orchestra for the community. And so we invite everyone to come to our post-concert receptions. It's not 10 people with big checkbooks. It's everybody, because everybody deserves an opportunity to attend the arts. Artistic access is so important to the vitality of the community. We started that way with Jimmy Guthrie, and we continue that way. It's part of our mission.
So one of the biggest stars of the symphony is mm-hmm. the composer. So tell us a little bit about him.
And, the maestro?
Yeah, the maestro.
Oh, my gosh. We were so lucky. We went through a two-year formal conductor search. We looked at 10 candidates. And he was the first one in October.
2 years.
Two years. People would come just to see who was coming up, you know, who was going to be the next candidate.
How do you find someone like that?
We put out a call.
Is there a lot of people that apply for those?
Oh,
positions?
lots and lots. Many, many qualified candidates. We picked 10 to see, and he was the first one to actually come and audition. It was October of 2017, and he was the first one out of the gate, and he conducted some beautiful pieces. One of them was John Wineglass's Big Sur, The Night Sun, and there were these giant, if anybody remembers, if you were there, these giant drums on stage, and we had a coyote singer, and it was really an unusual concert. And just wonderful. And he was so good. But I remember when he walked onto the stage, he said, "Good evening, San Bernardino." And people went, "Yay." You know, and he says, "Good evening, San Bernardino." And he was fantastic. He said, "My name is Anthony Parnther, and I sound like James Earl Jones." And he does. He does. But he had three standing ovations before intermission. And that just doesn't happen. So as part of the formal conductor search process, we asked all of the patrons, whether they'd ever been there or not, to fill out a little survey, five quick questions and a little five-point Likert scale. How did you like this guy? That kind of thing. And every time we would do a new concert, there would be at least a handful of folks that would write on there, "This one was good, but I really like that first guy. Can we get that guy back?" And he kind of was a front runner from the beginning, and we're so lucky to have been able to get him.
He looks real sharp up there too.
Doesn't he?
Yes.
Doesn't
yes.
he?
He's photogenic.
Yes.
Commanding presence.
Very commanding presence. And he's brought out some... he's brought out skills from our already highly skilled professional musicians that I didn't even know they were capable of. I'm wondering if they knew they were capable of as much as he brings out from them.
A conductor is different than a composer, but
yes.
A composer can be a conductor. Right?
Yes, and a conductor can be a composer.
Yeah, so a composer writes the actual music.
Composes the music, yeah, yes.
And then the conductor sometimes
interprets it.
Uses the other composer's music, or does he ever make any of his own?
Not that he has performed for us. Okay. So I wouldn't want to say he's never composed, but we have never played a piece that he composed specifically. Mm-hmm. He has, however, done something really special that most communities or cities or whatever that have orchestras, they don't get to do. He has brought in new music for almost every concert we have performed, and the majority of it has been for underrepresented composers. Did you know that in the U.S., only about 2% of the music that's played by professional orchestra is written, composed by women? And he's brought in several pieces composed by women and women of color as well. And it's been marvelous to hear these new pieces. So you can come to a San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra performance and hear a brand new piece of music that no one has heard before performed professionally. I mean, who gets to do that?
That's awesome.
We are so lucky. We're so lucky.
And San Bernardino, it is like this huge melting pot of ethnicities from nationalities from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to hear that that's happening, yeah, here, especially with some music that some people consider often elite.
Mm-hmm.
But this is brought down for the people, San Bernardino, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. People do have a misconception about what orchestral music is. Often they think it's classical, and then they think it's irrelevant because it's classical, because it was composed by some guy in a big wig from a long time ago. And if you look up these guys, most of them were young. Often they were what, at least in the beginning of their careers, were what I would identify as what we used to call emo. They were very emotional young fellows that wrote music and then died. You know, there was a lot of that going around. But people don't look at it. They look at the busts of them, you know, the ceramic busts of a musician, and you're just seeing an old white guy in a high wig.
Yeah,
and then you're like, what does that have to do with me?
Does he have earwigs?
Yeah. No. Exactly. So yeah, they think it's irrelevant, but when you go and listen to it, and you know, Maestro is wonderful. He talks about the music before we play it, and so it's not like you have to come to the pre-concert lecture. That's kind of elitist.
Mm-hmm.
But accessible music is explained during the performance, and he does. He talks about the music. He talks a little bit about the history. And then we play the piece, and he'll always tell you, listen for this because it means this. So I wait through the music because classical music is not my background. Mm-hmm. And
Mine either. Yeah, it's just a good buzz for me most of the time.
Exactly. But he plays all sorts of music, and we always try to put in something that's one of the foundational pieces. But we also play new music, and we play music from all over the world. And I think that's important because everybody needs to hear something that represents something that they can find relevant, that they can draw from in their own lived experience. And if you look at our orchestra, you'll see that it is also quite diverse. And that's important because kids coming to concerts, they need to be able to see themselves on the stage. And you're not going to if it's a traditional-looking orchestra. But that's not the future of our industry. Our industry is orchestras that represent everyone because there are amazing professional players from all over the world.
Any merging of hip hop into the orchestras yet? Like
not
like,
a lot of hip hop.
We had some Guns N' Roses earlier.
You did
November
mention Guns
N' Roses, right?
We had some rap.
That was actually probably my first experience with like besides movies and stuff with like wow, look what they're doing there, right?
Yep.
So like
no, well, we have done rap.
Oh,
we have
that's
done
awesome.
Spoken word.
Oh,
so
cool.
As well as the urban poetry. We have had gospel choirs out. We have a chorus now. We've had ballet and other dance. We've had folk dance on the stage. Whatever it is that's going to heighten the experience of the audience, that's what's going to connect people to the music. But don't think you're going to come to one of our concerts and you're just going to sit there quietly and try to stay awake, because that's not what we're about at all.
And also, team, some of our money, not a lot, but some of our money out of the general budget goes into helping arts in general.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those projects is the San Bernardino Symphony.
Yes.
And you mentioned we give $75,000. Is that a year?
That's a year.
Yeah, a year.
And we have to thank Councilman Damon Alexander, because he's the one that brought that back to the attention of the city. When Judith Vias was mayor, there was a $70,000 annual donation that was provided, and it allows us to be able to perform at the California Theater, which is expensive. So this allows us to be able to perform in the city at its largest performance location
available
to us.
Maybe we can get that bumped up over the years into $100,000 or something. We'll see what we can do.
We believe that the city is being very generous in that donation.
San Manuel is as well, correct?
They're wonderful donors for us for many years.
And can you mention a few others?
I can tell you that there are organizations from all over the place that like to be generous in our direction. We recently got an NEA grant, National Endowment for the Arts. They do not normally fund the Inland Empire, and they did with us.
Because of your hard work?
Because we have a wonderful organization that is worth public money.
Well, very humble, very humble. But we do appreciate your hard work to get these things all organized. I'm sorry, I have not attended any, and I feel bad right now. So
are you coming to July 2nd?
Yes, I will be there on July
2nd.
Okay,
team, you just heard him.
and if I say I'm going to do something, I do it.
Yeah.
I'll be there. But I'd also, like, it's all good there, but I also want to experience it in the California Theater. I've done a few events in there. It's very, very very cool to be in there.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, that was built in 1928.
It's got some great history.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to know where the California Theater is, right there by the movie theater.
On 4th Street, 562 4th.
Yeah, in between E and D Street? Or No, just...
It's right off E.
Right off E Street, right there on the corner. So if you're interested in going on July 2nd, go to SanBernardinoSymphony.org.
Yeah. Perfect.
And you can get a regular table if you want.
Mm-hmm. And you don't buy the table. You don't have to buy the table. People have been calling about that. Do I have to get the whole table? No, just get a seat. Mm-hmm. You'll be sitting with nice people. Or general admission seating. Table seating is $30 through $100 per person, depending on where you're sitting. And
$10 in kids under
12.
12 are free.
Do not bring your 13-year-old and say that they're 11.
but the fireworks will be awesome, too, with the symphony. So that sounds really cool to me.
It's going to be so much fun.
I want to thank you, Dr. Ann Vericel.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's
okay. And I appreciate all you're doing for the arts, speaking as a commissioner and a lover of San Bernardino. We need more things like this in our community.
Right.
And you've been here for so long and kept it going. And thank you so much for doing that.
Thank
2013
you.
To now is a very long time. And it's been the symphony has grown up with San Bernardino. So,
it has.
It's seen its good and bad times, and you guys are still there. Creating great art for the community.
We're very proud of that. We've kept prices affordable, and we've been here throughout all of the changes in our community.
Okay, and this is Robert Porter with Alice Seminary, and we are out of here!
Bye.
This is KCAA.
Chihibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit TehiboTeaClub.com. Tehibo is spelled T like Tom, A-H-E-E-B like boy, O, then continue with the word tea and then the word club. The complete website is TejiboTeaClub.com or call us at 818-610-8088, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-610-8088, TejiboTeaClub.com.
Once again, science marches on, trampling right over us in the false name of progress and efficiency. The latest advance of science is the cloning of animals. We can make every cow precisely like its progenitor, exult the lab techs working for corporate cloners. This eliminates uncertainty in meat production, for every cut can now be the exact same texture, taste, and composition. We have achieved the efficiency of the assembly line inside the animal itself. Yeah, well, what about that little oddity of cloned animals having a very high propensity to die before birth or shortly after? What about the abnormal rate of birth defects and health problems that clones have? Do we really want our families eating that? Oh, tut tut, retort the clonists. Don't you know that the FDA has now declared meat and dairy products from cloned animals to be safe? Don't worry, pal. The Bush administration has given the okay for meat and dairy corporations to market the cloned stuff to you without even labeling the product as cloned. Trust us. Now, I really am worried. Besides, we're lucky to have an abundance of meat and dairy products with a wide variety of flavors and textures produced by unique environments, farmers, and artisans all across our country. Why would we give up all of that richness for a cloned uniformity that pushes our food supply from the creative hands of family producers into